Now, there's some physicists who will tell you that we're actually living in the most elegant reality. I think that Brian Greene is in the audience, and he has written a book called The Elegant Universe. He claims that the universe we live in mathematically is very elegant. Don't believe him. It's an ugly, no, it's a pious hope. I wish it were true, but it's got way too many arbitrary coupling constants and mass ratios, and what the hell is dark energy? It's a real stick and bubble gum contraption. It's not an elegant universe.
I was thinking about how I would introduce my guest today, and do you understand the concept of multiverse theory?
Yes, like how that there are multiple universes. Yeah.
Well, so somewhere out there, my guest today is Ryan Coppertech, writer for Baseball Breakup,
yep.
A site founded by Coach Rick. But in this universe, though, my guest is Brian Toporek, podcaster for the NBA podcast and writer for B-Ball Breakdown. Brian, I mean, sloppy execution, but it was a pretty clever idea.
it was fantastic. And in that universe, none of the Sixers have broken their foot, and they are probably 2007 NBA finalists because they dethroned LeBron. So I like that universe. Let's go with that.
In that universe, LeBron's on the 76ers, though.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. LeBron and universe, Ben Simmons.
Well, you remember last time we were talking, Brian was on for my Philadelphia team preview. It's wonderful. If you haven't listened to it, you should. And we discussed, you know, would you trade Joel Embiid for two LeBrons?
Right.
So maybe in this universe, you traded Joel Embiid for two LeBrons.
I would not trade Joel Embiid for anything. He is a prize. And I've suffered too long to watch him play basketball. He needs to play for only the 76ers for the next 20 years.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. I did do this alphabetically by city, though. So Philly's a little bit further down, you know?
Yeah, that's fine.
So we're starting out. This, by the way, listeners out there, you're listening to Almighty Ball on the Almighty Podcast. On the Almighty Baller Podcast Network, check out the rest of our wonderful shows. I'm hosting a show about hoops history called Hoops Historians. We're doing our best free agent signings of all time, and you know there's some guys on that list that are great. So also check out Waiver Wire and more. But before you do any of that, follow my guest today, Brian Toporek. I already introduced him, but go ahead, shout out that Twitter. I know what it is, but they might not, yeah.
All right. You can follow me at B Toporek, T-O-P-O-R-E-K. And then you can follow where the NBA podcast. You can follow us at the NBA pod. We're hosted on today's Fast Break, so give them a follow as well.
All right. Well, speaking of fast breaks, the Atlanta Hawks might not be running as many fast breaks this year because of certain acquisitions that happened over the course of the summer. So last year, the Atlanta Hawks won a whopping 48 games.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And their over-under is set for this year at 44. And I want to start out, what do you think, Brian, over-under 44 for the Atlanta Hawks?
See, well, I just want to preface this before we dive into any of them and say that, you know, injuries are going to ruin all of these picks, basically. If
Philly fan, guys.
if Paul Millsap goes down for 50 games, you know, if I pick Atlanta over and Paul Millsap's out for 50 games, that pick's going to look bad. So in 3 months, I don't need anyone blowing up my Twitter feed because I made a pick today that went bust because of a major injury.
Well,
with
Brian,
that said,
you know the concept of if a tree falls in the woods, does it make a sound? Of course you do, right? Okay,
right,
well.
Right.
If you record a podcast with me and no one listens to it, does anyone get mad at mad on Twitter? You know,
I hope not. But let's not count our chickens here. I never know where the angry Twitter people come from. It's usually Lakers fans. So
Let's not check our Simmons before they hatch. I'm so sorry. All right, Hawks.
Yes, Hawks. I'm going... Oh, this one's tough. And I'm going to give credit to Vegas here, too, because I think a lot of these, aside from a notable few, I think a lot of these are actually pretty spot on. I'm going to go slightly under for the Hawks. You know, they lost Teague. They lost Horford. They got Dwight Howard, who I actually think is going to be really good in Atlanta. I think he fits what they want to do well. You know, there's no replacing Al Horford, but I think the story of Dwight Howard being on this precipitous decline since he left Orlando, you know, in the Lakers and Houston, and, you know, Houston, like, there was that story that they literally, he went to Daryl Morey and they were like, hey, like, can I get more involved in the offense? And Daryl was like, no, that we don't really want that to happen. So I think Dwight's going to be good. My big concern is losing Jeff Teague. I mean, I think Dennis Schroeder, in the long haul, it makes sense as their starting point guard, but I think there is going to be somewhat of a rocky transition. And their backup is Jarrett Jack, who's coming off of a torn ACL. So I think that point guard spot is what gives me a little bit of concern, but I'm curious what you have to say, almighty prophet.
Oh, I'm just Chris Axman now. You know that?
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, no. You dropped the moniker.
Yeah, well, it was just, you know, and it's interesting that you bring this up. We've talked about this. I was on the Waiver Wire, our fantasy show, recently, and I talked a little bit about it. But, yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, it had its run. You know, it got the people going.
Sure. Yep.
But it's run its course. And
okay.
I think that, you know, in terms of the Atlanta Hawks being like a 45-plus win team, that's run its course as well, you know?
Oh.
So it's not that they're going to be bad. And
right.
My introduction to the Atlanta Hawks team preview was that anyone who really thinks that they have a good grasp on what this team's going to look like next year is wrong.
Yes.
We don't know how Coach Budenholzer is going to adjust to the addition of Dwight Howard, but we do know that he's going to adjust. He's not just you literally can just replace Al Horford with Dwight Howard, but then you would have Dwight Howard taking threes, and that'd be a bad idea,
right?
And Budenholzer runs a delicate enough system that he just simply doesn't have the choice to not make changes. So, like, any evaluation you make on this team has to be based on talent, and the talent downgraded a decent amount, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Can we make the assumption that, like, he's going to stick to the Spurs principle of, like, no sticky hands, high ball movement, even if there's not as much spacing, the same ideals of basketball are still in touch. Like, you can't get a better big man than Al Horford for that.
Right.
And it's almost difficult to get a worse point guard than Dennis Schroeder for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I have concerns about their spacing. I have some concerns about their depth. I think very particular players, I have concerns about age. Kyle Korver, it's not that I don't even know what his injury was, which, like, indicates something, right? But I do know that he's 36, and whatever that injury is, 36-year-olds don't bounce back.
Yeah,
generally speaking.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I don't think they're going to be bad, and, like, I'm not confident on saying the under, but I think I have enough qualitative evidence to say that they'll be under. Definitely can't quantify anything with this team.
Right, for sure. For us saying under, it could be like a 42-win team. Like, that's still under, but we're still saying they're good. They are in contention for a playoff spot. It's not like we're saying they're going to win 20 games. Like,
Yeah. But one thing, though, too, is you brought up the whole injury thing before we even got started. They, you know, and this is true to certain extents, but, you know, the Atlanta Hawks, just with, like, Jeff Teague, I think if any of their starters got injured, that would probably be the end of their playoff chances. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I think they could survive a Kyle Korver complete breakdown. But Paul Millsap, Dwight Howard, Jeff Teague, and I think, honestly, if Kent Bazemore went down, they'd be in real trouble. So, four out of five of your starters, like, are essential to, like, a real playoff run. And that's a little scary to me. Oh, and hey, I also, I talked about this recently. I think that they're probably going to save Dwight Howard for the playoffs, too.
Like, limit his minutes.
Yeah, and they have a good center option with Thiago Splitter, but, like, not as good as Dwight Howard.
Right.
But I think their idea is like, okay, we've been a good regular season team, but then we get to the playoffs and like LeBron stomps all over us. Like,
right.
And, you know, there was a fateful 7-game series, or maybe it was just 6, between Orlando when Dwight was there and LeBron when his first go around in Cleveland, where Dwight Howard was sort of close to a LeBron stopper, and I think that's what the Hawks have in mind. And like, I just can't imagine them like taking Dwight and playing him more than 32 minutes, and that also sort of throws a wrench in the clockwork.
A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for 6 people facing forward, 2 people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
Yeah. That's a good call.
Yeah. So, Boston Celtics, 48 wins last year. There were a lot of 48 wins last year. A lot of teams a lot of teams hit that mark. And the over-under is 52.5. What do you guys say, man?
Yeah, it's aggressive, and I'm going to go over. I think the Horford addition is just so big for this team. I know Evan Turner was really good for them last year. But I think what they lose in Evan Turner, they gain more in Al Horford. Plus, I mean, I'm not super high on Jaylen Brown as a short-term option, but I don't think he's going to be a total bust. I just think Horford is so good and fills such a big need for that team. Like, you know, they're relying on Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk and Tyler Zeller, all of whom are fine players, but they're not elite by any means. Like, Al Horford, he's not like a sexy name, but he is an elite player. He is probably a top 20 NBA player. So you add someone to that team, like that's 4 or 5 wins right there. And this is a 48 win core. Again, Turner, that missing him is going to be, may hurt a little bit, but like they have a bunch of young guys too. So I'm banking on the addition of Horford plus some internal improvement. I think Marcus Smart could have a big year. With Turner gone, you know, there's been talk of like doing this super small ball thing with Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, and Avery Bradley.
I called that like a year and a half ago, man. I knew
it. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I think also Brad Stevens is a hell of a coach. He gets, you know, people are all in the church of Brad Stevens and they think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I think it's a little too far, but he's undeniably a great coach. Smart guy, designs plays extremely well, especially out of timeouts. So I think, you know, he's got a very cerebral player now in Al Horford. Isaiah Thomas had a breakout season last year. I don't think there's any reason for that to change. I'm pretty high on the Celtics. I have to admit, I think they're the biggest threat to the Cavs in the East. How about you?
Yeah, I think when I look at Jaylen Brown and I look at Justice Winslow and I compare the two situations, good cultures, good coaches, you know, standout athletes, good systems. You know, I just think that so much of Justice Winslow's, you know, defensive performance last year, despite his flagrant offensive shortcomings, was just because of Spoelstra just being a really good coach, both in system and development. So, like, I think that Jaylen Brown is going to be a contributor, but in the same way that Marcus Smart has been a contributor the last couple of years, and that he won't make shots. But, like, he'll probably be a net positive as long as he's playing against bench units.
Yeah.
And then you would hope that along that same vein of reasoning, Marcus Smart takes the next step, because Marcus Smart is, like, a jump shot away from being, like honestly, like a top 15 point guard. Like, he's defensively maybe the best point guard in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a little high. Top 5.
Right.
Like, that's fair, right? But even if he doesn't, I trust Terry Rozier.
Yes.
So I think Evan Turner would be a key functional loss if they didn't have so many playmaking options that I think they needed one more year to develop. Mm-hmm. And then now they can let him go and kick off the training wheels, and they should have plenty of options. And so, yeah, I'm clearly taking the over and talking about why they would be good. And, you know, another part of that is, like, we were talking about how it's hard to project what the Hawks are going to look like,
right?
Because of the translation to Dwight to Al Horford being so disparate.
Yeah,
Al Horford is just an infinitely better version of Solinger.
Yeah, right.
They do similar things, except Al Horford is better at every single one of them.
Yes,
except hamburger eating contests.
Right.
So yeah, I think that, like, apples to apples, you can look at the Celtics team and, like, figure out that it's going to be better.
Yes.
And there's enough reasons that stack up for me to say they'll be a lot better.
Yeah.
And in the East, you know, to borrow Derrick Rose's verbiage, which I'm not sure if you should borrow anything from Derrick Rose.
No,
but,
definitely,
you know,
not.
We'll have a chance to go into any night and win that game.
Yeah.
I think the Celtics legitimately could do that just by having the best defense or the second best defense or the third best defense in the league. So... Yeah. I mean, do you have a bone to pick with any of that or anything
we
additional?
We also didn't mention Jay Crowder, which, like, that dude broke out in a huge way last year.
Right, yeah.
And I mean, there's no reason to expect with Turner gone, I feel like his minutes are only going to go up. Like, he played around 31 last year. It wouldn't totally shock me if he's closer to 34 or 35 this year. I mean, he doesn't have the name recognition of, like, Carmelo Anthony or LeBron James by any means, but, like, he's one of the best two-way young wings in the league. Like, he is a poor man's Kawhi, basically. So he's going to be a huge piece that the Celtics can rely on. And, like, in the East especially, you know, you're going against LeBron, you're going against Carmelo, you're going against Paul George. You need that wing stopper, and they have that in Jay Crowder. So yet another reason to be high on the Celtics this year.
Yeah, and I mean... they really weren't a 48-win team last year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they lost Jay Crowder, like, obviously a key piece for them for the last fourth of the year, a crucial time where you maybe want to have Jay Crowder. But then, right. I mean, I think people forgot a little too easily that the first fourth of the year they were starting David Lee, which didn't work out so hot for them.
right.
Like, during that middle period when they hit their stride and really figured out what they wanted to do with a lot of the pieces that they maintained this year or just had a straight upgrade, like I was saying, Solinger to Al Horford is just a clear upgrade. You don't need to change the system. You just are better, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they figured out what they want to do during that middle season. And as long as nothing goes wrong, they should be fine. But then on top of that, even if stuff goes wrong, this roster's like 13 players deep.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have a better record than the Cavs.
Yeah.
I think the Cavs will, like, beat them in the playoffs.
Right.
But teams this deep are good
in
the regular season.
Yes.
They can withstand injuries. They can rest players. If someone looks a little bit tired, they can just sit them a little bit longer. They should go into every game bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and that means a lot.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okie dokie. Well, if the best team in the East isn't the Celtics, it'll definitely be the Brooklyn Nets.
For sure.
Who had 21 wins last year. I think that, you know, it's an obvious over. You know, I think they're going to challenge that 73-win season the Warriors had last year.
Oh, totally.
you know, back to the universe where the Nets are actually the Nets. I want to hear what you have to say first. I waffled on this a little bit.
I'm actually pretty solidly over on them. I think the big thing that's selling me is Jeremy Lin is reunited with Kenny Atkinson, who was an assistant coach during his Linsanity days in New York. So I think Lin in L.A. got this reputation of being overrated, and he was under Byron Scott, who, like, refused to let him run pick and rolls, which is literally his game. And there were, like, just stories upon stories coming out, like, Jeremy Lin wants to run pick and rolls, and Byron Scott's like, no, I don't think that's a good idea. Like, okay. And now we see what Byron Scott did to D'Angelo Russell, just, like, basically sabotaged his entire rookie season, and now D'Angelo Russell looks like a real player again. So I think, you know, Lin in Charlotte in this reserve role, like, revived his career. He looked like a good basketball player again. It's shocking what you do under a good coach. I think Atkinson, having been there for Linsanity, he knows what Lin's strengths and weaknesses are, and he's not going to force him to not run pick and rolls ever, because that's his game. And he knows he and Brook Lopez, he said, like, these are going to be the centerpieces of our offense. When it comes down to crunch time, we're going to run pick and rolls with Lin and Brook. That's all you need. So I think, you know, they lost Thaddeus Young, which is a big loss, obviously, but I admire the way they reloaded. I think Sean Marks, their new GM, is very pragmatic, and he knows that this is going to be a long rebuild. You know, he tried to get Allen Crabbe and he tried to get Tyler Johnson in restricted free agency, and those teams both matched. But they still got Trevor Booker. They got Justin Hamilton. They traded for the pick that they got Caris LeVert for. I think Isaiah Whitehead, their second round pick, you know, the kid's a scorer. Like, I think he's going to have a role right out of the gate.
I hear good things about him.
So. Yeah, they need instant offense. I think he'll provide that off the bench. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, their pick last year, their first rounder last year, he lost a lot of his rookie season to an ankle injury, but kid's really good. Like, I've compared him to a poor man's Michael Kidd-Gilchrist before. Like, he's not a scorer. He can't really shoot well, but he's a great wing stopper. Again, you know, it's a very important thing to have in the East. So, you know, if they won 21 last year, by no means do I think the Nets are challenging the 73-win Warriors, but I think they'll be in, like, the 24 to 26 range.
Okay, so here's my problem. If all of that works out the way that you described,
mm-hmm.
25 to 26, that's their ceiling, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I mean, there's a universe in which they win, like, 12 games.
And I don't know. I'm, like, skeptical about the possibility of everything going right for them. I just feel that's like fair. If everything needs to go right, like, you're right. Like, if you don't think that anything is going to go wrong or that some piece isn't going to slide into place, they're a 25-26 win team, but they have a new coach, Jeremy Lin. I have been big on the Jeremy Lin horn, saying, like, he's better than this. That being said, the Linsanity era stopped when they played the Miami Heat and they just swallowed him whole and he shot 1 for 10 because the league just figured out how to kill Jeremy Lin. So he's as good as that, which is still a really good player. It took the Miami Heat to beat them, and they had LeBron James in a year where he probably should have been DPOY. But say Jeremy Lin has lost a couple of steps, right? That, like, 25 goes to 23. Say Brook Lopez, who has been healthy for the last 3 years but does have a history with foot problems, say he misses, like, 10 games. That's three more losses. Yeah. Now you're at 21. Say that, you know, Atkinson wants to be a little bit more experimental with their lineups and try some stuff that really just doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And now you're at 18 wins. Do you get where I'm going with this? Like,
yeah, that's a very fair point. I mean, as a Sixers fan, I could vouch for things go wrong very quickly, and you go from what could be a 22-win team to a 10-win team. So it's like, I'd say the safe bet is the under. I just might be a little higher on the Nets in general. Just because I think a lot of their young pieces are going to be better than we have any reason to expect. But this is pure projection at this point. Like, we obviously don't know because it's only a couple games into the preseason, and preseason games don't matter anyway.
Yeah, I think I'm going to take the under just because of that margin for error. To me, is a little bit frightening for a team that we just really don't have answers about.
Yeah.
We're looking at the pieces and saying, like, best case scenario, this is a 25-win team. But best case scenario in the NBA doesn't work out very much.
Right. Unless you're the Warriors.
A 3-1 lead. Okay.
Good point.
So now on to the Charlotte Bobcats. Hey, yes. Throwback.
Heyo.
So they also won 48 wins last year. You know, whoopee for them. 48 wins, not that spectacular. Everyone else did it. You know, be your own person, Charlotte. Like, dare to dream to, like, win 49 or 47. You know?
Yeah, was that so much to ask?
You know, if your friends dropped off 48 bridges, would you do that? So their over-under is 40.5, but then was raised to 42.5 just because I think everyone was, like, hitting the under so hard.
I know. I was gonna. Yeah, at 40.5, I was gonna pound the over.
Well, what about at 42.5?
I think I'm still taking the over. I mean, the big losses were their bench. So they lost Lin, they lost Courtney Lee, and they lost Al Jefferson, which are notable losses because their bench was what fueled a lot of their regular season success last year. That said, they get Michael Kidd-Gilchrist back, who they barely had at all last year.
Right.
So I mean, you know, it's not like they didn't at all replace their bench. Like, they got Ramon Sessions, I think, to replace Lin. They got Marco Bellinelli in that trade with Sacramento to replace Courtney Lee. So, like, they have nominal replacements for the guys that they lost. And they got Roy Hibbert to replace Al Jefferson. And I'm actually I mean, we were talking before we started recording, but I'm a Georgetown guy, so I believe in Roy Hibbert. Patrick Ewing is an assistant coach there. So Big Pat and Roy have worked together, even dating back to his college days. I think if there's anyone who's going to get Roy Hibbert back to that defensive player of the year caliber player that he was in Indiana, it will be in Charlotte under Steve Clifford and Pat Ewing. And then, yeah, I mean, I just think MKG coming back, like, I don't think there's any reason to think Kemba, you know, he had a career year last year, but I think, I really think the fact that they have Nick Batum there, it helped take pressure off of Kemba. He doesn't have to create all the time because he has Batum, who's also a very good creator, which allows Kemba, it frees him up some. It doesn't put all of the offensive responsibilities on his shoulders. So I think that's going to be a big help again. I think Kemba's going to have a great year again. I think he's coming off of some kind of surgery, right? For like meniscus or something. So, but everything I've seen.
Yeah, something that he hasn't been cleared for.
Yeah.
Which to me raises some concerns. But I'm willing to let it slide just because I think that they should be that little bit over the 42.5 mark.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I'm taking the over. And for a lot of the same reasons that you just said, last year, Kemba was like a much, much better player than he was for the first like few years of his career. And it's crazy, Brian. Who would have thought that a point guard who takes a lot of his shots off the dribble would incrementally increase as the floor got increasingly spaced?
Right.
Like,
crazy.
Who would have thought? It's fucking insane. Like, you know, like, who would have thought that, like, playing, you know, Al Jefferson with, like, the bench unit and letting Kemba Walker be open and free with a pick-and-roll center who has, like, a jump shot, a bit of a jump shot, would help him out?
Yeah.
You know, I'm stunned.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally floored. Never saw that coming.
So I think what they were thinking with Frank Kaminsky and, like, most likely whiffed on is that, like, for all extents and purposes, let's try to make Michael Kidd-Gilchrist our power forward.
Yes.
Our main big man so that we don't, you know, so because he's good, right? He's good at that, right? And let's try to have someone who, at the center position, can spread the floor a little bit. But the thing is, it's like, you know, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, like, he might have developed a jump shot, and there's reasons to think that he might have.
Yeah.
That I'm not going to bank on. Because, like, even if he hasn't, you know, players aren't just totally useless if they don't have a jump shot. And Michael Kidd-Gilchrist is one of those players. One of the key things, you know, I have a feeling that you're right about Hibbert. I don't know where that's coming from with me. I don't, like, I see a lot of the dots coming together, and I have this, like, Shakespeare type thing. Not Shakespeare. what is that? Sherlock. Have you ever watched that show?
Yeah.
He's got the darts and charts and stuff. Like, the Roy Hibbert stars are aligning.
Right.
But I don't know if that's a real thing that ultimately you can quantify, you know?
Yeah. I might just be a gigantic homer. So take that with a grain of salt.
But, like, it's there, though. I see it, too. I just, like, I don't know if it's all going to come to fruition.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense that it would. I just, like, I'm a little bit concerned that we would be left holding the bag if we count on it to happen.
Yes.
But all of this is to say that this team has consistently, since Steve Clifford came, significantly outperformed its over-under and significantly outperformed its talent level. And, like, this team didn't really take a step back. And Hibbert doesn't have to be great. We can be, you know, wrong about the Hibbert stars aligning, and this team will still be 42.5. And on top of that, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist cannot develop a jump shot, and they'll still be better than 42.5.
Yeah.
They're a well-run team, well-coached team. They have a lot of talent. Like, they have enough talent anyways. And, like, they're, you know, in classic Hornets fashion, I think, not going to f*** it up. Because, you know, they've been, like, bottom in the league in turnovers, like, every year.
Right.
Top of the league in, you know, fewest offensive rebounds allowed every year. They're just precise. And I think that it's hard to beat a team like that on a nightly basis.
Yeah, and you mentioned MKG at the four. I think one of the things that's attractive about them is they have that flexibility. Like Marvin Williams, you know, you have to assume opening night they're probably going to do Kemba, Nick Batum at the two, MKG at the three, Marvin Williams at the four, and then probably Cody Zeller at the five.
That's but super they have, switchy. They've got some wing depth.
Yeah, they have the flexibility where they can shift Batum to the three, MKG to the four. So they can do the small ball thing if they want. They can do bully ball if they want. Like, they've got a bunch of options at their disposal. Marvin Williams was hitting threes last year too. So even if MKG hasn't developed a jump shot, you still have Kemba, Batum, and Williams who can all shoot threes. And Cody Zeller's got some range as well. So it's not a huge detriment to them, even if MKG is still a limited shooter.
Yeah, and I feel like it's worth mentioning that for the same reason I took the under with Brooklyn, that's sort of why I'm taking the over with the Hornets. Because in the same way that I don't think that you can expect if you're the Nets, if a couple things go wrong, it all, like the house of cards collapses. Mm-hmm. And with the Hornets, that same thing applies, but you can knock over a lot more Jenga blocks. I used two different f***ing board game metaphors there. I'm on a roll. Yeah. You can, like, destabilize it a lot more. You can, like, shake it a lot more, and it's going to be okay. There is a tipping point, though, and I feel like that has to be said. You know, Bellinelli could continue to be shit. Like,
right.
I think he probably won't be.
Yeah.
I think the Sacramento effect is real, you know?
Yeah. Yes,
like, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist could just be pathetic. Kemba could regress to the mean, and, you know, it's technically possible that he just had a good shooting year and it wasn't because the floor was spaced. Yep. It's possible. I don't think it's likely. And Marvin Williams, this one to me is a little bit more likely. Contract year Marvin Williams, I'm skeptical about. Like, but it would take like a consecutive, it would take like a wombo combo for all of this to happen. And like, you don't expect that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago Bulls.
Yeah. Speaking of the wombo combo.
Yeah. It's the Rondo combo. I don't want to do this podcast anymore. I give up. 42 wins last season, over under 38.5. All right, Brian. You know,
I mean, I'm going to speak for my fellow podcast host, Morten Jensen, who is a Bulls fan, and I'm going to take the under here. I just think there is a lot. You were just saying how a lot of things can go wrong for the Hornets, and things can go well, and they could still win 42 games. There's a lot that can go wrong for the Bulls, and they could just completely implode. I mean, I don't. We talked about this. We did a Central Division preview, and one of the questions,
it was great,
like,
by the way.
Thank you. And it was like, literally, how do you score with a Rondo, Wade, Jimmy Butler backcourt? Because none
Pick
of those
me.
Dudes could shoot.
Call
please,
me.
Please, call, go. I'm still curious.
You don't score. That's, that's the answer.
Right. Like, none of those dudes can consistently shoot threes. Wade, like, will not take threes. Maybe it was just a Miami thing. Maybe Fred Hoiberg's going to encourage him to take four or five threes a game. But none of those guys commands the respect. You know, like, if I'm an opposing defensive coordinator, I'm saying do not chase them. Like, let them go wide open from beyond the three-point arc. Just clog the paint. Don't let Robin Lopez touch the ball. Like, Nico Mirotic is the one who would concern you, but he's very streaky. I mean, Taj Gibson's a good player. Bobby Portis, I think, is going to be good in a few years. You know, they've got some, they have bench depth. Like, they have McDermott. They have Paul Zipser, their new guy. Tony Snell is whatever, but he's a warm body who plays basketball. Denzel Valentine, I think, is going to be good. So, like, they have what should be the nucleus of a good team. But because this Rondo Wade experiment happened, I just don't see how it's going to work out. Especially, Hoiberg was supposed to be this, like, pace and space guy. But why do you take two guards who are on the wrong side of 30 who can't shoot? It's like you are intentionally sabotaging his chance of putting together a competitive roster. I just channeled Morton. I am done. All you, Chris.
Yeah. You see, like, that's the thing. I was really low at them at first, right? I was, mm-hmm. you know, I was totally convinced they were going to be really bad. You know, 27, like 28 wins, right? And then, as I thought about it, I improved, right? And I went to wondering where they'd be in, like, the 30 to 31 win category.
Yep. That's like, I'm at, like, the 34 to 36. I think they'll be mediocre, but I don't see.
Yeah, 30 to 31 is, like, hyperbole for the sake of comedy. Yes. It just, like, you know, wasn't that great.
That was like Milwaukee last year. Like, they completely imploded, and I forget what exactly they were, but they were in that low 30 range.
Well, so, like, I hear that imploded word, and the character stuff aside, like, as like the chemistry stuff aside, right? Like, mm-hmm. I don't think that, like, I think that it's going to look like fireworks because Rondo, right?
Yeah, but, right.
Like, if you look at the Mavs with Rondo, right, as they, like, cascaded into oblivion after yes. they got Rondo, from an encore perspective, that was, like, a fizzle. And then, you know, what is that intro to that one book? It's like, you know, so this is how it all ends, like, not
yeah,
with a...
Yeah.
So, like... That's to me is like I think as an encore perspective, they're just going to be completely neutered. It's not.
Yes.
It's not going to be this big explosive death. It might emotionally be that way, but it's like okay, it's like full court offense. You have three below average players at their position in terms of speed. So like, good luck on fast breaks, especially because you can't flare anyone to the corners to shoot threes and open up the basket.
Right.
Good luck scoring in the half court with like no spacing and three dominant ball handlers who aren't effective off ball, except for Dwayne Wade, but he's 38.
Yeah.
Even if you could just bench Rondo and replace him with, I know you're not the biggest fan of Cannon, but even if you could just bench Rondo and replace him with Cannon, like that would be like huge for them.
Yeah.
But they can't do that. You can't bench Rondo.
Right.
So yeah. I don't think Hoiberg is like an NBA caliber coach because of what he did last year. But this year, I literally don't think that there's a coach in the NBA that could figure out how to like glitter this piece of shit up enough to make the playoffs.
Yeah.
Like he has a pass for this year. Last year, he was kind of deplorable and he should have been able to do more with that squad if he wasn't like system, though.
Right.
Of course,
he
was a first year coach. Whatever. I just don't think he showed all that much potential as an NBA coach. That being said, this year we're going to see the failure of a poorly constructed team and like it will fizzle and then pop, not explode or implode.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's like a semantic thing. I'm not like trying to call you out. I'm just like
differentiating it. Yeah, that's a fair point. Like it might not blow up in fireworks and force them to trade Rondo and trade Jimmy Butler and, you know, just literally take a stick of dynamite to the team. It just seems like Hoiberg especially already dealt with some credibility issues in the locker room last year. You know, Jimmy Butler kind of undermined him. And now Rondo, who has this history with, like, guys who are far more established. Like, Rick Carlisle is a great coach with a long history in the NBA. And he's, you know, like... He is a much more established figure, so I worry what happens if Fred Hoiberg
so
runs
George
a foul.
Carl, and like
yeah,
that Sacramento Kings situation was pretty fucked up. But like that being said, you know,
right?
I don't know. You see, we mostly talked about how this offense is going to be terrible, but I'd venture to say that their defense will be even worse.
Yeah,
it's just not the thing that pops out at you.
Yeah,
we talked a little bit about like the transition failings, but like. Robin Lopez is not the type of guy who can deal with the fact that, you know, the Sacramento Kings last year, they were so terrible at defense, and part of it was because of the system, but it the system, like, specifically pointed out this reality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, George Karl was the only coach in the modern NBA who would run a 3-2 zone, so, like, three on the perimeter
and two on the inside.
It doesn't make any sense in the modern NBA. And, of course, the only way that you could run something like that is literally with Kevin Garnett as, like, the top of the guy who's, like, guarding the point guard, essentially, right?
Yes.
That's how you do it. You're the Minnesota Timberwolves, and you have, like, Anthony Davis or, like, Kevin Garnett or, like, Carl Anthony Towns. Like, that's the only way you can pull off a defense like that. But they put Rondo, and it just collapsed. It caved in every single time he was on the floor. Like, Rondo was, like, so bad.
Yeah.
He was, like, one of the worst defenders in the league last year, and it was put on display in this grotesque 3-2 zone where he was isolated in the middle of the court just, like, getting, like, embarrassed over and over. And
right.
I don't know, man. He's going to be bad. There's only so much floor that Jimmy Butler can make up for, can, like, compensate for. I just think I can imagine a couple of lineups they can put together that could be above average offense, offensive, like, rating, right? I can't even think of, like, one defensive lineup they could put that would be above average.
Yeah, I mean, Jimmy is their only solid wing defender. Like, even if you dig into the bench, McDermott's awful. Snell just doesn't bring much to the table. Denzel Valentine's not a great defender.
Bobby Portis, like, was pretty... I mean, Bobby Portis looks good. I like him for the future, but...
Yeah.
If you look at the analytics, like, he was really bad on defense.
Like, Taj Gibson's good, but I mean, if we're already concerned about spacing, like, can you put Taj Gibson as your starting four? when you already have three guys who can't shoot. Like, Nico kind of has to start at the four, but as you said,
Rob, he was atrocious.
Yeah, like
in their first couple preseason games.
Yeah, so it's, I mean, this team, you know, I said it at the top of this segment, like, I just like how the Hornets could have a lot go wrong and still be okay. Like, the Bulls to me seem like one of those teams where everything needs to go right and they'll still be lucky to hit 40 games. Like, I really think, I mean,
I think everything could go right, and I still don't think they hit 40.
Yeah, right. They still, their ceiling might be 36 wins in the best possible scenario.
So, like, the last point, we've been stuck on the Bulls for a while, but it's cool. It's one of those teams that is worth talking about. The last point I want to make is I'm, like, really frustrated with these platitudes that I get from some of the lesser NBA Twitter denizens and NBA fans who just don't know what they're talking about. Like, explain to me, it's like, well, you have Dwayne Wade. Like, Dwayne Wade is going to eke it out. Like, Dwayne Wade won't let it be a 30-win team. Oh, well, you know, Rondo was, like, an all-star. Like, Jimmy Butler, like, he won't let it be worse than... They won't let it be that bad. They'll somehow figure it out. It's like...
Right.
No one can explain that to me, how that is the case. How is it that they're going to, like, stop that from happening? Like, stop the inevitable collapse of their team from happening? Like, these aren't, like, superhumans, you know?
Right, yeah.
They're people in the face of this, like, really poorly constructed system that you can only do so much with, and they're just going to be bad. Like, that's it, you know?
Yeah.
No one, I don't know, do you know the type of thing that I'm, like, talking about? It's like, no way a team with Dwayne Wade gets 30 wins.
Right, right, like, right. Yeah, like
why
you
not?
You have three all-stars in the backcourt. And that's, like, I'm sure that's what the Bulls were thinking. Like, they didn't want to go full in on this rebuild, even though they kind of need to. Like, they refused to trade Jimmy on draft night, even though the Celtics were reportedly interested. You know, they signed these, like, stopgap guys instead of committing to their young players. And they're like, yeah, well, we got three all-stars in the backcourt now. We can market the shit out of this team. But it's like, yeah, you got three all-stars who don't fit well together. Like, Amari Stoudemire was also an all-star. He's now playing in Israel. Like, sometimes these guys just fall off or they don't fit well. And they can't, like, Amari cannot save a team any more than Rajon Rondo can at this point. Like, Rajon Rondo played very well last year for the Sacramento Kings in terms of per-game stats. And the Kings still sucked. Like, there's nothing...
Yeah.
I just don't know that any one of those guys, unless Jimmy just goes, like, transforms into a transcendent superstar, like, challenges Kawhi for, like, the best up-and-coming two-way wing. Other than that, I think they're in a lot of trouble this year.
Okay, well, and like, that's an interesting question. Like, just replace Kawhi straight up for Jimmy Butler, like... Is this a 40-win team yet?
I would be a little higher on them. I would take
Kawhi's
the over.
Kawhi's, like, a really good three-point shooter right now.
Yeah, I would take the over on that.
Yeah, but, like, yeah, Jimmy Butler's not Kawhi Leonard.
Right.
He's, you know, he's got a lot of Kawhi Leonard aspects, but, like, he's not going to hit, like, 50% from three.
Yeah.
Cleveland Cavaliers, yes. 57 wins last year, 56.5 over-under. I would imagine that both of us agree on this for a lot of the same reasons.
Yeah, you already said the under. I'm with you. I think they're just going to manage their minutes. I don't think it's an indictment of their talent. You know, they won the title last year. They knocked off the 73-win Warriors. If in case you guys didn't know, the Warriors blew a 3-1 lead in the finals.
Dude, I love that joke.
It's not
becoming meta.
Yeah, it really will.
Everyone knows.
I swear to God.
That's just like...
Like,
go ahead.
Bay Area fans, I'm sorry, I'm just going to rant for a second. They've turned into the new Boston fans, where, like, they were so deprived of titles, and now, like, the Giants have won three, the Warriors won one, and they were in the finals the last year, and now they get so, like, pissy when their teams aren't, like, when they have very good teams that don't win everything. Like, guys, you won four sports titles, and the Niners were in the Super Bowl a couple years ago. Like, you've had a very great decade of sports. Just chill out. Like, you got Kevin Durant now. Just, I want you to be bad because your fans have become so annoying. You are the new Boston fans of the 2000s. You're like the Boston fans of 2010s. So just, like,
Brian, what city are you from?
I'm from Philadelphia.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'm not from New York. No, this is not a Red Sox Yankees thing. This is just I work with a bunch of people from the Bay Area, and they are annoying as all hell when the like God forbid the San Francisco Giants lose one of their 162 baseball games in the regular season. It's like the fucking world is ending. Just so complete side note. Back to the Cavs. I just think they're going to pace themselves. Like that, Tyronn Lue has already come out and said managing LeBron James minutes is like my biggest priority this year. I just think he's going to play a career low in minutes. We still don't know what's going on with J.R. Smith, right? Like he's still technically not re-signed. So
the Cavs just want the shirt off his back.
Yeah, they really
get it, man.
I would say like he needs to literally play like he needs to tattoo his number on the back on his back and then just play shirtless the entire year. Like I do not want him in a jersey at all ever again.
My Cavs team preview, which I highly recommend. I named Shirts Off for JR.
That's fantastic. But yeah, I mean I just think they're gonna pace themselves. They know it's a long grind. The 82 game season, it doesn't matter really. Like the Celtics are their only real threat to take them over in terms of record, maybe the Raptors.
Celtics.
But they're gonna be in the finals again, guys. Like so they just know just the only priority is making it through the season healthy, and reducing the minutes of their big three will be the key to that. So for that reason, I'm gonna say they're a 54 win team instead of 57 wins, but they're still gonna be great. They're still gonna be in the finals. This is not an indictment of the Cavs at all.
I need to think about it a little bit more in terms of my willingness to just say, okay, yeah, they're just gonna have a smooth ride to the playoffs. I think that, you know, and literally I need to think about this. We've been maybe jumping the gun on just saying, well, they're gonna coast to the finals. Because, like, I think in the NBA, that's not how it works, which the Warriors learned last year when they lost a 3-1 lead in the finals. So, all that being said, LeBron has already talked a little bit about being too tired for the NBA season to be starting already. He's played as deep into the offseason as you could possibly play for the last 500 years, you know?
Right, yeah.
He, particularly this last offseason, just like completely carried his team in a way that really I don't think that anyone thought that he could do anymore. Or
no,
maybe we did. I don't know. I thought his performance the year before was amazing.
People were like, when they had the 3-1 lead, it was, let's write our obituary for the Cavs. It was over.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I was, I wrote an article after they went to 3-2, right? Just saying, like, none of this matters. The Warriors are just going to slaughter them.
Right,
that
yeah.
Didn't work out for me very much. But, you know, like, but more reasons than that. Maybe LeBron comes back and he's, like, revitalized. Maybe he comes back and, on top of that, he wants to prove a point about this team during the regular season, which, like, we're all skeptical about.
Yeah.
The same thing applies. Like, what about J.R. Smith? J.R. Smith is probably out of shape and he hasn't been at training camp.
Right.
Iman Shumpert sucks. Yeah. Kyrie is sort of injury prone. Dellavedova was a really good fit. Now they're going to be playing Kay Felder. That's a problem for the regular season, regardless of whether Kyrie gets an injury, right?
Right.
Mike Dunleavy was a cool pickup, but, you know, like all the questions that we had before this team won a championship are, at least during the regular season, still valid.
Yeah.
And there are more questions this offseason. So I don't know why their over-under would be higher, and I don't know why it's reasonable to expect them to win 57 games if that's the best that they've done with better rosters and a younger LeBron, you know? Right. And with something to prove on top of it.
I'm right with you. Unless he wants to just say, screw it, let's win 74 and then win a ring to really Warriors.
That would be beautiful. I like the universe where that's happening.
Big Mo Quezon here. The new Smokehouse Pizza from Little Caesars is certified smokeified. 8-hour smoked brisket, certified beefified. 10-hour smoked pulled pork, certified hogified. Applewood smoked bacon, certified bacon fine. and the Smokehouse Seasoned Crust and Tangy Barbecue Sauce? Certified Smokified. And what's better than three smoked meats on one pizza? This certifiable price. The new Smokehouse Pizza from Little Caesars is only $9.
Pizza, pizza.
At participating locations plus tax.